so hard for us
to believe that tomorrow is the last day of 2018. And I know that a lot of you have been really seriously considering resolutions. What am I going to do in the new year? And so I thought I would just share some insight from a woman who often gave us good ideas about resolutions. This is from Irma Vombat. She says these are six of her resolutions one year while she was still living. She said, I'm going to clean this dump as soon as the kids grow up. Number two, she said, I will go to no doctor whose office plants have died. Number three, she said, I'm going to follow my husband's suggestion to put a little excitement into my life. I'm going to live within our budget. Number four, I'm going to apply for a hardship scholarship to Weight Watchers. Number five, I will never loan my car to anyone I've given birth to. And then number six, and just like last year, I am going to remember that my children need love the most, and they deserve it the least. So we start thinking about New Year's, and we start thinking about the end of this year, the beginning of another year. And I started thinking about what would be an appropriate sermon several weeks ago. And I started reading, and I've even asked some of you, what makes the end better than the beginning? I talked to some of you who've retired, and what made your retirement better than the beginning? Well, for some of you, you might scratch your head and think, it doesn't make sense to me. It was so exciting when I got started out. I was such a great person for that job, and it fit me just perfectly. And then things started happening, and I retired. The wise man, in the context of telling us that we must not get so excited about the world and all the things that are in the world. We have many, many great blessings. We have a young man sitting over here who is the cross-country runner of the year. I love that because I love you. But I'm telling you, that's not the greatest thing I think about you. I am so glad that I see you as a super young man who happens to be a great cross-country runner. And that's what we need to be thinking about. What is it that makes us who we are and what we are? And if we get so wrapped up in the things of the world, the Book of Solomon that we call Ecclesiastes is going to tell us we need to think about things in the right way. So in the midst of a discussion, thinking about how we ought to view the world, he says this in verse 8 of chapter 7. Better is the end than its beginning. And the patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. Well, when we start thinking about life and the way life works, and we look at the works of the world, it's sometimes this thing doesn't make sense to us. Because we could name a lot of things. A whole lot of things where the beginning is better than the end. Think about a bad habit. Think about somebody who loves alcohol and who enjoys drinking. It might be just socially. I have never met an alcoholic who said, give me a drink. I want to become an alcoholic. I want to lose my family. I want to lose my respect. I want to lose my job. Let me get going here. I am loving this so much. And I will love even greater being an alcoholic. I've never heard an alcoholic say that. But in the beginning, wow, that good feeling, that buzz, that makes you forget about what's going on that's not so good in your life. That good time with everybody else, sharing that social moment. Oh, that's really good, isn't it? But often, it leads to something that's not so good. I don't know how many people have started out doing great in business. Everything is wonderful. They are making money like you wouldn't believe. and something turns sour in the business, economy changes, culture changes, something happens, and bankruptcy comes. How many people do you know that were so excited about getting married? Through years at Fried Hardeman, I've seen lots of great couples get together. Individuals who at the time loved the Lord, they loved each other, how exciting. And I performed some of those wedding ceremonies, only to see marriages that we thought were made in heaven end in absolute disaster. So we can say, boy, the beginning was fantastic, but the end wasn't so good. How many friendships have you seen that were so good? They were great at the beginning. And then something turned and bitterness came about and the friendship just dissolved. And didn't just dissolve easily, but dissolved into bitterness and hurt and anger and frustration. Well, we see this kind of setting. So we rightfully raise the question, what makes the end better than the beginning? Well, first thing I'd like you to consider is your outlook on life. Your outlook on life. Now, we have the coach of a national championship team sitting in our office. Congratulations again. A great accomplishment. We love that because we love him. We love that because we love winning. But what is your outlook on life? What is it that really makes you happy? Everybody in this room, I think, believes that winning is great and makes life fun and neat. I feel that way very, very often. But what makes you happy? Think about the people that you read about who win the lottery, who win thousands and thousands and sometimes millions of dollars, whose lives are so disrupted because of the money that comes into their lives. You see, if it's money that makes you happy, you're going to be in trouble. What is your outlook on what makes you successful? If you have some good friends, if you have a little money in the bank, if you can enjoy going places that you want to go and be with friends you enjoy being with, is that the ultimate for you? What is it that really makes you happy? Who are you? There was a time in my life, if I had had the ability to be the cross-country runner of the year, I'd have had my chest stuck out and I'd have been thinking, wow, what an athlete am I? Because that's where my goals were set. That's what made me happy. But we all recognize the greatest athletes in the world get to the point to where they can't function in that way at some point in the future. And so if that's what makes you happy, it's going to go away sometime. It may be sooner rather than later, but it's going to go away. What is it that says who you are? You see, those of you that are parents, you go through life and you get your children introduced as your children. And then later on, you get introduced as their parents. And things change. What is it that makes you happy? Well, when we have a worldly attitude, and that's what Solomon is focusing on. And Solomon is saying the exact same thing that John says in 1 John chapter 2, beginning with verse 15. Do not love the world or the things that are in the world. All that is in the world, the desires of the flesh, the desires of the eye, and the pride of our eyes, the pride of life, excuse me. Those are the things that make a worldly person happy. We want to win and we're happy. We want to succeed in business and we do and we make money. And it's very, very happy time for us. But you know, when we start thinking about the worldly attitude and we start thinking about things in the way that the world thinks about them, that's when the end that sometimes is so bad looks so great in the beginning. I have a story in my hand about the London firemen strike of 1978. One of the great animal rescue attempts of all time occurred. The British Army had taken over the emergency firefighting during the firemen strike. And on January 14th, they were called to an elderly lady's house in South London And when they got there, the call was to retrieve her cat that was high up in a tree. She was so uptight about her cat, and she wanted that cat saved and retrieved. They arrived, this note says, with impressive haste. They soon discharged their duties. This lady was so excited about this cat being rescued, she invited those men in. She gave them what we would call cookies and tea, but they call it cookies and biscuits. She fed them, bragged on them. They got in the truck, backed over the cat, and killed it. Things don't end the way we want them to. And if that is our outlook, if our world is over because our cat died or our dog died or our business dies or a friendship dies or whatever happens, we're going to be in real trouble with our outlook. Just thinking over and over again about successful people, worldly successful people. And I just came across this old note that I've read in the past several times. I don't know if I've ever read it here or not, but I've read it several times in my 50-something years of preaching. It says the number of people who commit suicide after experiencing fame and fortune of worldly success is astonishing. Multimillionaire George Vanderbilt killed himself by jumping from a hotel window. Lester Hunt, vice governor of Wyoming before being elected to the U.S. Senate, ended his own life. Marilyn Monroe, the famous actress, writer Ernest Hemingway, athletes. I was looking at a list of athletes the other morning that lost their lives in 2018, and Jan was there, and I said, wow, the number of people who lost their lives before age 30 is astonishing. And what's more astonishing is most of those took their own life. They had money, they had fame, they had everything the world offers, but something was wrong with their outlook. And so this morning, one of the main purposes of me encouraging you to think about what makes the end better than the beginning is to think about how you're looking at life this morning. So the outlook is important, but the process. Solomon is concerned about the process in this passage we're going to see in a moment. But God has always been concerned about the process. Those things that we look at that are almost meaningless to us are sometimes some of the most important things in our world. In Zechariah chapter 4 and verse 10, this passage came to mean something to me many years ago when I was a young faculty member and our rules at Fried Hardeman were so tough. Your hairstyle, for example, couldn't touch your ears, couldn't touch the collar when you're standing up. And there were several of those things. And man, the students were in rebellion and they were upset. Their feelings were hurt. And so I thought, I'll fix this. My time to speak in chapel. I'll fix this. I'll show those students that those kinds of things are so small in comparison to eternal things that we really need to think about how we view them. That was my purpose. Something went wrong. My dear mentor and friend, President E. Claude Gardner, he got up after my presentation and he quoted this verse, reminding all of us about the importance of small things. At the time, I thought, you've missed my whole point. You think I'm fussing at the school. I'm not. I'm trying to get the students to think in a positive way about how meaningless some things are compared to eternal things. But as you notice, I've never forgotten that moment. And it's made me think about the importance of small things. This passage is about the beginning of rebuilding the temple and the rebuilding of it. One cornerstone, how important is that? How important is the guy up in the woods cutting the timber and that those stone cutters out in the quarry getting the stones? How important is each one of those persons and the job they're doing in the rebuilding of the temple? And so Zechariah is recording these words. We are not to despise the day of small beginnings. There's a lot of small in my life. I don't know about your life. There's a whole lot of small. I'm a member of a visitation team. Boy, you got to go to another meeting. You got to get another card. You got to take the time to do a visit. That is, if you want to be successful as a part of the visitation team. We talk to people. We invite them. We try to get them to listen to what God says, and we see almost no response. Wow, it just seems so insignificant that I've invited somebody and they're not here. I've encouraged them to know God, and they don't care any more about God today than they did last week. Sometimes we have a chance to study right now, like in our Bible classes. And there are people who see that as such a small thing. They have so many things going on in their mind. Some of them don't even come. They are so into, this is such a small part of my life, it really doesn't matter. Several years ago when I preached in Memphis, a group of ladies came to my office. They were all, in my judgment at that time, really super members of the kingdom. They came and they were talking about how disappointed they were in life. These were all women who dropped out of college, worked to put their husbands through college. Their husbands were all very successful people. I mean, very successful people. And now these women, all they have done is stayed home after they put their husbands through school, had their babies, raised their babies, and now their babies are gone and their life is wasted and they are miserable. Wow. What a sad outlook on the process of life. When we begin to think about the work that we do and the process in life, boy, life doesn't work out the way that we want it to. There's probably at least one person in this room, with as many as we have, who started out 2018 very healthy. And now you're very sick. You started out with a great job, and now you've got a much lesser job or no job. You started out with great hope that some kind of treatment or therapy would help the problem that you are involved in physically. But it didn't help. When we start thinking about life not working out, there are many, many ways in which life doesn't work out. There are people in this room who had family members or friends that were being counted on. Some of them for years in the future, they are no longer with us. And life doesn't work out the way that we think that it should. Go back and read Hebrews chapter 11. If you begin with verse 33, in those first two verses, 33 and 34, you're going to read about people who became kings, people who had many victories, people who were conquerors, and they were God's people doing God's will in God's way, and they are in the hall of faith because of what they did with their lives. But wow, we want to be found in verses 33 and 34, because starting in verse 35, some of those people were tortured. They refused to accept release so that they might rise again to a better life. Others suffered mocking and flogging and even chains and imprisonment. They were stoned. They were sawn in two. They were killed with the sword. They went about in skins of sheep and goats, destitute, afflicted, and mistreated. It's going to happen. Some of you are conquerors. And you've risen socially, financially, and otherwise. Some of you would be listed in verses 35 through 37 if your life is being viewed. What is the process in which you work in life and in which you view life? God teaches in this great verse that we need patience. Look at Romans 5 and verse 3. Not only that, but we rejoice in our sufferings, knowing that suffering produces endurance. The ability to keep going comes from having a hard time sometimes. We learn how to deal with problems. We learn how to deal with suffering. And because of that, we move forward in a great way. And that's what God's intent for us when things don't go as we planned. That's what God's intent was for those people listed in verses 35 and 36. When we start looking at our life and the process that we go through in living life and making choices, the end is going to be better than the beginning for people who develop patience and work through suffering. Well, for whom is the end better than the beginning? Those who trust in God. We say, as Isaiah did in chapter 46 and verse 10, we know that God knows the end from the beginning. He knows the outcome of the kind of life that you and I are living. And he tells us what the outcome of that life is going to be. And then the wise man says, trust in the Lord with all of your heart and do not lean on your own understanding. In all of your ways, acknowledge him and he will direct your path in life. The end is better when we are disciplined. I am so thankful to God. With the immature outlook I had on life and the immature process with which I lived life as a child and growing up, I'm so thankful to God for a mom who was an absolutely strict, tough, hard-headed disciplinarian. Because you see, the end of chastisement, the Hebrew writer says, is better when it results in peaceable fruits of righteousness. When my mom could encourage me to stop thinking so immaturely, stop behaving so immaturely, to stop thinking so worldly and start thinking about spiritual things, my life is much better. The end is going to be better than the beginning. Hated it when she spanked me. But as I look back, I love that she disciplined me. The end of suffering is better on those who suffer with Christ, because if we suffer with him, we're going to reign with him. The outcome is so significant. Tonight, what will be the outcome of this day? Will it be that you've been lifted up because you had a chance to worship God? Or will there be some other thinking of a worldly nature about the process that you have encountered in your life during the day? When the day began, the day the Lord has made that we can rejoice and be glad in, we can be glad when they said, let us go to the house of the Lord. We have all kinds of opportunities. The outcome of life is going to be what is so significant. So what makes the end better than the beginning? Where will we wind up? I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, behold, the dwelling place of God is with man. He will dwell with them and they will be his people, and God himself will be with them as their God. He will wipe away every tear from their eyes, and death shall be no more. Neither shall there be mourning, nor crying, nor pain anymore, for the former things have passed away. And he who was seated on the throne said, behold, I am making all things new. Also he said, write these things down, for these words are trustworthy and true. When you start thinking about life, will the end be better for you than the beginning? It depends on your outlook today and the process with which you live life. If your outlook is that you must serve God and must be obedient to God, and you work hard at that, the end is clearly going to be better than the beginning is going to be worse. The end is going to be better as you look at the process of your life and you begin thinking about where you are today on the journey that you are on. the very purpose of our next song is to encourage you to look at that. And if you need to make a change in a public way, we want you to do that today. We would love it. We'd love to take the time to do that today. And so the outcome of your life is going to depend on the process as to whether or not you are born into the family of God by repenting of your sins, being buried with Christ in baptism, raised to walk a new life, and then remain faithful until the end. This morning, as you think about the words to this song, think about the outcome of your life. A good outcome requires you to be resolved to do what is right. Come if we can help you. Let's stand and let's sing.